Bill Buckmaster, along with my buddy on the other side of the glass, Mr. Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing our program, Midweek Edition, final Wednesday of July. And my goodness, an excessive heat watch. The difference, Tom Fairbanks, between an excessive heat watch like we had last month and this month, one word, humidity.
Yes, we'll have humidity with this one. And this one, they're calling it a excessive heat warning.
Heat warning?
Yeah, that is, if I understand it, watch means it looks like there might be some hot weather coming.
Yeah, this is
a warning is, hey, this is hot weather. Be careful if you're going to be outside.
Yeah, that's very good advice. And it's going to be about 3 days of this. So we'll get through it. We are bringing people together here on the radio in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio on 1030 Tucson's Voice for Trusted News Talk, worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com and kboi.com. We've got pretty much every show up on my website through the podcast since we began this project back in January of 2011. So there is quite an archive there at buckmastershow.com. Let's welcome now our guest. Mike Hammond is with us, and Mike is the chair of the six-member Arizona State Transportation Board. Mike is also the founder and shareholder of Cushman and Wakefield PICOR, Southern Arizona's leading independent commercial real estate brokerage and management firm. Mike, how are you?
Doing well, Bill. Glad to be here.
You know, I've got so many questions. I want to talk a little bit about commercial real estate in the second segment. But as far as the Arizona transportation situation, how has COVID affected projects? There's a feeling in the community that everything's on hold.
Well, that's not correct. In fact, I don't know of any project that's been... There's one project that's been canceled in northern Arizona, but in our region, all the projects, they may be delayed a little bit, but none have been canceled. Right now, as a matter of fact, we're finishing up two major projects, I-19 in Ajo Way and Kenny Valencia. Those two projects alone are $80 million worth of projects.
Wow.
Ruth Ralph and I-10 is under construction, and that's 26% done. That's $78 million project. And you've got Houghton Road to I-10, which is about to start another $23 million project. And then you got SR-189, the project in Nogales connecting into the Mariposa Port of Entry. That's an $82 million project that's 15%.
Well, those are big paydays for workers, which is good news. I mean, a lot of people at work.
Mm-hmm. $264 million worth of projects.
Whoa. Yeah. Now, downside, highway user revenue funds, typically the acronym there is HERF funds. How has COVID impacted that?
Well, we're just getting the data in. There's a lag time for this information, and June was the first full month that we had data with which to kind of gauge the impact of COVID-19, and it's tremendous. Just in that month alone, the highway user revenue funds fell $20
million. In one month?
1 month.
And percentage-wise?
17% drop.
Whoa.
In 1 month, yeah.
Well, so when you, this could be like a $100 million hit maybe? For the year?
It should be at least, it's projected to be at least $100 million this year. It should recover a little bit, but the impact estimated in our five-year plan is going to be around $400 million. So about $100 million a year, $80 to $100 million a year.
But does that translate in projects being scaled down or delayed or what?
Mostly delayed. We have some CARES Act funds.
That's that federal group, the federal program that is supplying COVID stimulus money.
Yes, and the governor's committed some funds. I mean, we're trying to juggle projects right now, but make no mistake about it, it's got a tremendous impact to the state road system.
I'm curious about this CARES program, the one that we really have an issue in some of our rural areas with high-speed internet. Mm-hmm. And we're talking now about maybe building that up through I guess, through the Arizona Department of Transportation, kind of an information highway, if you will. Yeah, how's that going to work?
Well, in the CARES funds, part of the use of those funds that Governor Ducey has started implementing is a $40 million investment in broadband and fiber networks along I-17 from Sunset Point to all the way to Flagstaff, and on I-19 from Tucson all the way to Nogales. These corridors were identified by the Department of Education, university systems. They're all involved in this process of where we where those choices were made on the initial investments. These are areas where they really need to expand the access for the rural areas, especially the schools, but not just schools, hospitals. There's a lot of services that need to be supplied to this region that start with a good backbone. Hopefully we can get some of the other highways going in the near future.
How long before this stuff would be on board, and running?
The time frames...
Couple of years or what?
Yeah, it's not as long as you might think. I believe by 2024 we hope to have this in place.
Well, it never has been so important with more and more of the kids right now trying to do online, and so we really do need to beef that up. Any other money that came in, or any other projects through that CARES Act?
Yeah, not through the CARES Act, but another $4 million was allocated by the governor to improve the real-time information along the highways. And this will be all the way throughout the interstate system. New equipment, for example, to weigh the vehicles as they go down the highway. We have a lot of overweight vehicles that damage our roads. We have no way of really catching them unless we pull them over and weigh them. We've also got new dust control alarms between Picacho.
Yes.
Up in that area, we want to expand those.
It's a very dangerous area, especially this time of year.
Very dangerous. There's also new equipment for pavement temperature. Temperature, real-time information on temperature impacts road wear. Also, real-time data. Right now, our system gives us about 72 hours notice to really get the data and analyze it. We'll be able to analyze data in real time on what's going on our roads. And that's happening right now. That should be done by 2022. So that's good.
What about the Regional Transportation Authority? They've got five more years on the plan. They're in the midst right now of input sessions. What's your take on all of that?
Well, and some of this is personal to me. I do believe there's going to have to be a significant, if we renew it, a significant portion that's dedicated to road maintenance. Right now, as the plan was passed by the voters, there was no road maintenance.
No, there was. And at the time, it didn't seem so crazy not to have it in there because the roads weren't as bad a condition. Yeah.
And the RTA has determined that it's better to stick to with what the voters approved rather than try to change it at this point, that the damage to the renewal possibilities would be too great. They want to really stick to what the voters approved, somewhat controversial. But the new plan will probably have some road maintenance money in it, and we just need to get a consensus. It has to be a consensus among all of the mayors in the region that this is the correct plan going forward, or it's probably not going to get approved. It'll be a tough lift anyway, and it wouldn't be a new tax, but the continuation of that half-cent sales tax is absolutely critical. It's the only money you're seeing spent on our state, local, and we don't go into neighborhoods with RTA money, but on our major routes, it's the only money that's being spent right now is RTA money.
Timing has to be right on this thing.
It does, and we've got still some challenges to get Grant Road done with some of the drop in revenues we've had between 2006 to 2008 and what we're dealing with now. We're coming up a little short, but we think we can get all the projects done to include the completion of Grant Road, which is the last major project after Houghton gets completed.
That's kind of the last then signature piece for this five-year period.
Yeah. It is.
But that's a huge, huge deal, isn't it?
Phase one and two are done. It's the third and fourth phases. Third phase is I think they're in acquisition right away and some of those things designed right now. I think they've got that plan. And then the last phase, I believe, is from Swan to Campbell.
All right, we're going to take a break right here. We're with Mike Hammond. Mike is the chair of the six-member Arizona State Transportation Board. We're going to talk a little bit about commercial real estate, something Mike knows a lot about. He's been very much involved in commercial real estate in this town since 1978. He's the founder of Cushman and Wakefield PICOR, and we'll talk more with Mike Hammond. One-time Man of the Year. Let me see. When was that? 2013. But he's still, once you're a Man of the Year, you're always a Man of the Year. So we're going to take our break right here in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Be right back on Buckmaster.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is in the process of developing a new 20-year regional transportation plan, and soon will consider which projects best address transportation needs across the greater Tucson region. As part of its ongoing public outreach, the RTA invites your early input on which projects meet regional goals. Learn more about plan development and provide input at rtanext.com.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. It's our midweek edition. Coming up at about 12:35, we'll get an update on the COVID-19 situation. Lots of questions for Will Hummel. Will is always a great guest. He's the former director of the Arizona Department of Health, and he's been all over the place in the national media. He's got a lot of opinions on what we've been doing right, what we've been doing wrong, but he will have an update, and hopefully we'll get some good news about these cases starting to kind of plateau, and at least that's what many people are seeing. But right now we continue our conversation with Mike Hammond. Mike is the founder and shareholder of Cushman Wakefield, PICOR, Southern Arizona's leading independent commercial real estate brokerage firm. And we've been talking in the first segment with Mike about transportation needs, because he is also the current chairman of the Arizona State Transportation Board. And we learned in that first segment that we're going to take a big hit here because of COVID with our highway user revenue. It was down $20 million, some 17% down in June alone. The total cost to this will be in the hundreds of millions of dollars. And so, Mike, long-term impact is going to be with us a few years, you think?
It'll be 3 to 4 years before we get back to normal on that.
How about commercial real estate? How are we doing through these very hard times?
Well, ironically, our business has been holding. I won't say it's gone up, but it's been holding. And maybe it's because, you know, our business kind of requires movement up or down. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of movement in commercial real estate right now, not just all COVID-related, but just a lot of movement. And our some divisions are doing better. For example, the apartment multifamily division is doing very well. And the industrial is doing very well with this last mile delivery and a lot of the shift of retail to more industrial settings.
Yeah, to warehousing. That's huge now. So that area, that sector is going to do well for
mm-hmm.
you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The retail sector is always been in flux with, this is just going to, I think, exacerbate the shift from, you know, the big box, Macy's,
yes.
Dillard's, that kind of thing, to the online sales. Online sales have been increasing steadily anyway, and they've gone off the roof. For example, mm-hmm. I don't think my wife has been in a store for 6 months now.
She's probably not alone. I mean, it doesn't take much. Just drive anywhere in town, and you're going to see Amazon trucks all over the place. So,
they'll bring a tube of toothpaste that costs $4 to deliver.
Yes, they will. They will bring a tube of toothpaste. But that sector's doing well. What's not doing real well on the commercial real estate end?
Everything is doing okay. Probably the most disruptive right now that we really don't know how it's going to play out besides retail.
Office?
Is office.
Yep.
We still have our meetings at the office, but they're almost all Zoom right now. Mm-hmm. We're on 50% furlong. Not furlong, but we divided we have 50 mm-hmm. employees. 25 are...
Staggered times
and all of those issues. But one of the things that I think is going to stick is that certain meetings you won't get in a car and drive to.
Mm-hmm.
So there's probably some efficiencies there if there's a bright spot in this that are going to come out of this COVID situation. I think there's going to be, for the first time, really home workers.
Mm-hmm.
They've been trying to go that direction and not doing a particularly good job of it, and this may be a tipping point.
Mike, do you see a redesign of the office as we know it with this social distancing? Do you think this is social distancing will be one of those things that will stick around even after COVID is hopefully in the rearview mirror?
You know, it's going to be interesting. You know, we've, as a nation, have really fought the mask.
Yes.
If you go into Europe, even before COVID, you would see people walking down the street.
And Asia, all over the place.
Especially Asia.
Yeah.
So I guess, you know, the longer this plays out before we get a vaccine and kind of move on, the longer I think the impact of those kinds of health issues. I think the style of hug and kiss, whether it's in Mexico where even the men might hug and give a peck on a cheek to a man or certainly a woman. These kind of customs may change, and it's a very different culture when you stay 6 feet away from everybody mm-hmm. when you walk into a room. So I think it's It's hard to believe it's been only since March.
Oh, I know. This is the year that just, I mean, one day can seem like a month this year. And everybody's had this kind of an emotional roller coaster. I've noticed that on my Facebook page, I think a couple of weeks ago, I was posting, what do you miss most before, you know, all this happened? What do you miss most since this has happened? And a lot of people were just saying human touch, hugs and handshakes. So it's going to be interesting to see whether we will develop a kind of new greeting customs.
You know, I mean, you look at bars and restaurants, too. I mean, that how that recovers is going to be just be very interesting. It's how, I don't know how you make a profit on 50% occupancy. It's so there's going to be some fundamental changes there. People may be eating in more. Ordering from restaurants, delivery might accelerate autonomous vehicles running around your community delivering food. So there's a lot of real-time stuff that's got, for me, so I have a lot of interest in seeing how this plays out. And there'll be a lot of opportunity, by the way, in how it does play out if people are paying attention.
And it's interesting to see how the evolution of the shopping center, it was kind of on its way out anyway before COVID, and this has sort of hurried things along. However, I will say, when things started to reopen, I think Macy's surprised a lot of people when they had really stronger sales than they had expected. Mm-hmm. Of course, we've had this second kind of surge in cases, which has now suppressed some of that. But there is still some demand of people actually wanting to go into a retailer.
Yeah, and there are certain products that you really want to try on. Although some online companies are making it very easy to return, it's just not the same.
So the overall picture for commercial real estate is pretty strong. I mean, what kind of, do you have any kind of numbers for us?
Well, strong, you know, we're not going to.
Well, last year was very strong.
Last year was very strong.
I remember.
We may get within 90% as a company. I don't know how other companies are doing, but we may get 90 to 95% of last year's revenues, which would be shockingly positive for me. I would not have expected it.
Is there commercial real estate space as far as warehousing, or how are we doing on the absorbency there?
Industrial still tight.
Industrial
is very tight. Multifamily, it's hard to find properties to buy if you're a buyer. Retail has a lot of dynamics going on, so there's selected vacancies, whether they're big boxes or malls. Office has a lot of functional obsolescence that has nothing to do with COVID. Some of these old office buildings just don't have, you know, the vibe of a new one.
So the amenities are missing.
Yeah. But overall, we deal with those and work through them. So overall, I think we're pleased with how we're surviving this COVID-19 crisis.
You've had some connections with Mexico. How are they handling all of the commercial real estate scene?
But you know, Mexico has a lot of, you know, they get, you know, the old phrase, when the United States sneezes, Mexico gets pneumonia.
Yeah, I've heard that.
You know, the NAFTA 2.0 is a good positive. Some of the negatives, though, is they've got a leftist president. And also our nationalism is, and free trade is a bad word now. That's really disrupting supply chains. And so that real-time decision-making on supply chain is gone. Everybody's kind of on hold, which has slowed down cross-border business. And you couple that with COVID, I think their numbers are not testing like we are, so you never really know. But I don't think they're any worse than they are in the United States. But the maquila industry is, again, an industry where people are packed in pretty tight on their workstations. And, you know, that's affected some of the production chain into Detroit for cars. And It's still a global world. It'll be interesting to see if we can put that genie back in the box.
When did you come to Tucson, Mike?
1976.
Where were you coming from?
I came from Europe. I spent 7 years in Europe.
What were you doing over there?
I got into the life insurance business. I was in the military, and when I got out, I stayed in Europe and went into the private sector.
And what was it about, how did you evolve into the commercial real estate?
You know, fate sometimes just throws its, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. I left Europe with a friend who wanted to come back to Tucson because he played baseball for the U of A.
Had you ever been to Tucson?
Never been to Tucson. So we opened up an insurance agency in 1976. I was in that business for 2 years. No fun selling life insurance in the United States. I got into commercial real estate in 1978, and here I am today.
Do you remember what your first big commercial real estate deal was?
I do. Probably my largest was a building that United Technologies built that I handled in Broadbent Interstate Center there at I-10 and Grant Road, a two-story office building, 70,000 square feet.
You kind of hit a home run there, right, as a kind of a rookie.
Well, I wasn't quite a rookie. I think I'd been in the business about 3.5 years, but I guess as far as standards go, I was still a rookie then.
All right, Mike Hammond, always a pleasure to see you. Keep up the good work, not only with PICOR, but you're very busy with the Arizona Department of Transportation, where you're the chair. So always good to catch up with you, Mike.
Always a pleasure, Bill. Thanks a lot.
Mike Hammond has always been a very busy guy, and he continues to be so, just like we are here on the Buckmaster Show, with lots coming up next. Will Hummel is going to be with us, the former Arizona Department of Health director. We'll get an update on COVID-19 from Will right after this in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios at 12:31.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over 5 buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than 2 decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our midweek edition. This portion presented by our friends at Green Things. We're in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. Green Things, 50 years and still growing. They're over at 3384 East River Road, and on the property, the 13 acres, amazing plants, trees, annuals, just about everything for the garden, and that handmade furniture and fine art. Oh my goodness, at Zocalo Village, some beautiful things. Jan, who does the buying down there, makes some trips down to Mexico, has such great taste. Jan, one of the owners there at Green Things, brings back all these wonderful treasures from south of the border, and they're now on view at Zocalo Village. The websites, greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Let's welcome now Will Humble, who is the executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association, 30 years in public health. Will really has done a lot, including he spent two decades at the Arizona Department of Health Services, where he served in various capacities, including the agency director from 2009 to 2015. He's been a health policy director at the UA. He continues to be involved in health policy at the Zuckerman College of Public Health. Will, how are you?
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for the invitation again.
Yeah, it has been about a month. We had you on our Friday roundtable. I think it was the Friday of the 4th of July. You were up in Prescott. So much has happened on this COVID-19. July has not been a good month for Arizona. Give us the overview right now, Will.
Yeah, when we last talked, it was, as you mentioned, around the 4th of July weekend, and things were not looking good at that point. You know, there was the face covering requirement was brand new. Luckily, the governor shut the bars and the nightclubs just a few days before that. But we were really seeing a tremendous increase in cases at that time when we were talking around 4th of July, and that really continued up until, I would say, the middle of this month, when we started to begin to see that the face covering requirement was actually showing a reduction in new hospitalizations, some moderation in the number of new cases coming in, although it's hard to really say that for sure because the turnaround time on the tests are so bad right now. But things are much better. The trend, at least I will say, is better than when we talked about a month ago. So I'm more optimistic today than I was last time we talked.
The week-to-week caseload is really diminishing, isn't it?
Well, yes, but remember, it's the turnaround. You know, when somebody gets a specimen taken, when a sample goes into the lab, a lot of times, actually most of the time, it's not coming back for 12 to 14 days. And so when you look at the dashboard at the state health department's website, it's a little deceptive because it looks like it's dropping off faster than it really is, because there are so many samples that are sitting over at Sonora Quest waiting to get analyzed. But I will concede that, you know, things appear to be leveling off and even decreasing, because, you know, the hospital data doesn't lie. That's independent of the testing turnaround time. So things are definitely better. And I think it's in large part due to two things. Number one, the face covering requirement, and Arizona's responding by actually putting a face covering when they go out in public and indoors. And the fact that the bars and nightclubs have been closed for the last month, I think, has also contributed greatly to what we're seeing, at least some optimistic information data coming in around hospitals and cases.
Well, we're in this hot zone of 21 states, almost two dozen states. What does it take to get us out of that zone?
Well, I think more of the same is what I think we need. Continue to wear the face coverings in public. One of the things that we really the best information that we got on the importance of face coverings came out in early June. It's the National Academy of Sciences report that showed for every week that a state has a face covering requirement with good compliance, you benefit by seeing a 4 to 5% reduction in new cases. So if everyone keeps wearing a mask, that will continue to work in our favor. The next thing we have to do is fix the turnaround time for these tests, because right now people get their test and they're not getting their information back from the lab for 2 weeks. Well, what that means is they don't get any actionable information that they can use in their personal and professional lives. And so therefore that's impairing our ability to take advantage, use that information to slow down the spread of this disease through isolation and quarantine. Plus, it is impairing the county health department's ability to do good contact tracing, because the data is coming back so late. So we have got to get this fixed. It's been a problem for 2 months. It's not a hard thing to fix. Some promises have been made by the governor and the health director in this regard. I know Sonora Quest is trying. I hope next time we talk, we're not going to even bring up the subject of turnaround times, because it'll finally be fixed.
Well, you think about it, Will. Turnaround time of 14 days, you could be over this. In fact, the CDC today just issued a new guideline saying that the quarantine time, the downtime, if you test positive, now is only 10 days instead of 14. What we really need is a test within results in 24 to 48 hours.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. There's no doubt about it. There's no reason we can't get there. We need a level of commitment from the executive branch to make it happen. They need to partner with either Sonora Quest or get some new partners in. This has been a long-standing problem, but it starts with recognizing that the problem exists. And I have seen the last two press conferences, and the governor gets it. Now they just need to fix it.
When you were the health director in 2009 to 2015, did you have sessions talking about what if a pandemic were to hit? Was that ever in the planning?
Yeah, you know, actually, that was an initiative that was started by George W. Bush, the second Bush presidency. During his term, his second term, he really focused on pandemic readiness. And when I was at the State Health Department, we began for the first time to get grant funding so that we would put together planning documents to help you better respond to pandemics. The kinds of things that we saw in the early executive orders from the governor were really out of that playbook. Those executive orders in March and in April, a lot of those came out of the pandemic readiness plan that we had put together in 2006, 2007. So that, but my career goes way back to the 80s. But that was the first time I think that we saw a real recognition at the state and federal level. At the state level, we had Governor Napolitano at the time, that it was important to get the planning documents in place so that when a pandemic comes, that you're not, that you have something to go by, and that you can respond more quickly. And I saw it, by the way. I mean, I saw the results of that work early on with the governor's executive orders, because they were right out of that pandemic playbook that we wrote back in 2007.
As I recall, wasn't H1N1 2009, you would have been the agency director at that time?
Yeah, yeah. It was 2009. It was March or April 2009. And, at the very beginning of H1N1, it felt a lot like it was going to be a pandemic like we're in the middle of now, or maybe even worse, actually, it seemed like at first. But as we got more surveillance data in from the U.S., we began to see that while it was a new influenza virus and while it was dangerous, it was manageable. And so we and the county health officers and me as the director of the state health department, we were one of the very few states that never did close schools during H1N1. And the reason was that we felt like the benefits of school outweighed, of the kids attending in-person schools, outweighed the risks that kids would face by attending school that year. And I think it was a good choice. But I also agree with the decision made this time during this pandemic, because it's a different virus and the risk-benefit is a little different than it was during H1N1.
And as far as schools, do you think the governor made the right decision leaving it up to the individual districts?
Well, that's in state law, so that's not his decision.
Okay.
That's the way our state laws are written. But I do agree, and I did a bunch of advocacy on this a couple weeks ago with his recent decision to set some standards and criteria for districts to meet before they set their opening date. Because what had been happening up until now is the governor had been setting a date. Well, a date is fine in a non-pandemic year. In fact, it makes perfect sense. But when you're in a pandemic, it makes a lot more sense to measure the community spread, look at those metrics, mobilize the community to achieve those metrics, and then your school district is free to set their in-person instruction date. But ultimately, those decisions are driven by state law, and you know, they're elected officials. They're accountable to their voters within their school district, and these are not easy calls that they're up against in the next couple of months. Really difficult decisions at these governing boards.
Yeah, we're going to have the superintendent of the Tucson Unified School District on our program tomorrow. And yesterday we had the county, Pima County, urging no school here in Pima County. It's a tough call, and online is still very questionable, Will, about how much education online can provide.
Well, I agree, and especially in those early grades. Here's one of the things that I've been floating the idea of starting once we achieve some better, you know, controls so that we can get to a 5% positive rate, downward trajectory in cases, to think about opening instruction in person for the K-5 group first. Number one, it's hard to see how they can benefit really from online instruction. High schoolers are so digitally native. I could totally see how that can work for high schoolers. K-5, I think they're just going to miss a lot. Plus,
yes,
we know that K-5 kids under 10 specifically, are at very low risk for complications from the virus, and in fact, are lower risk from contracting it in the first place and bringing it at home. So I think they're at a lower risk to begin with, and they, I think, benefit disproportionately from in-person instruction. So I think that's something to think about for districts, to explore K-5 first and then see how it works, work up to middle school from there.
Yeah, I saw something today from the CDC saying spreaders, really under the age of 9, it's very, very unlikely that under the age of 9 are spreaders of this COVID-19. So that's really something to think about with these younger kids, getting them into the classroom.
Yeah.
We'll stick around. We're going to take our break right here. 790-2040, if you'd like to ask Will Humble a question about COVID, he'd be happy to take it. We'll be right back in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studios.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer, and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year regional transportation plan,
the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for the draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. I'm Bill Buckmaster. We're on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk in Southern Arizona. Will Humble is with us. Will is the former Arizona State Health Director, and he is currently the Executive Director of the Arizona Public Health Association. Will, you've been around public health for decades. When this is talked about and all over and taught in public health and in colleges, what will be some of the things, the takeaway messages of the great COVID-19 pandemic?
Oh, I think we are going to learn a lot about public health in terms of, you know, what's an effective intervention, which are the kinds of things that have the highest return on investment. How do you slow the spread of an illness like this and most effectively protect your economy? And the reason I say that is because, you know, there are many different countries that are taking a different approach to this pandemic. Sweden is taking a very different approach than, say, Switzerland and Denmark. And so we're going to be able to compare the results, both the gross domestic product over the course of time and also the spread of the illness, along with hospital capacity, death rates, what we call morbidity and mortality. That's on an international stage. And within the U.S., I think we're going to learn a lot through, you know, our academic partners in public health as they explore the various decisions that were made by different governors and the results that those states achieved in protecting GDP, protecting jobs, and saving lives, and protecting their hospital capacity. So I think we will learn a lot from this in a large part because states are taking such different approaches. It's going to allow us in academia an opportunity to evaluate the effectiveness of those decisions. And the next time there's a pandemic, and hopefully it doesn't happen while I'm still around,
I know.
We'll know a lot more. It's actually a good thing when different states and different countries take different approaches because it allows us to compare. It's just basically a big, giant global natural experiment.
Could we have learned some lessons from 1918 that could have been applied maybe really early on back in March in this country?
I think we did learn some things. You know, 1918, the state of science was much more primitive than it is today. I mean, they still had statistics and they still learned from that pandemic, but not nearly the amount that we are going to learn from this pandemic. You know, one of the things, the studies that people often cite is the differences between the way mayors behaved in 1918, as they put different interventions in place, comparing the cities that, say, for example, canceled parades versus the cities that proceeded and the outcomes that happened in those cities. And that's by actually, you know, this theory of social distancing and the stay at home orders, et cetera, came from that 100-year-old research. Now, as I said, that, you know, that in many ways that was primitive work, and nothing to say anything bad about the work they were doing. It's just that we're a very different level science-wise today in 2020. I think this is going to be a huge learning experience, and some really thoughtful and useful academic papers will be coming out of the results that were, you know, in the U.S. and internationally.
We will be having the flu shots available in all of our pharmacies probably in a couple of weeks. I remember taking my shot last August. I thought maybe it's too early, but I wanted to get in on it early. This is an important flu shot to take this time around, isn't it, Will?
Yeah, well, it's always an important thing because influenza doesn't get the respect that it deserves year in and year out because of the kind of, I mean, it kills a lot of people. And the vaccines are pretty good. Most years, it provides really actually pretty good protection. And the more people that get vaccinated, the better. There's some interesting, some interesting results out of South America today and yesterday, where they were looking at the spread of influenza. So, you know, we're in the middle of our summer. They're in the middle of their winter down there. And what they are seeing is that influenza is really on the decline in South America, precisely because the face coverings, the physical distancing, the things that they're doing down there to protect against COVID-19 are working on influenza as well. And I had a kind of an intuitive sense that that would be the case, but it's really nice to see the data bear that out. Still going to be important to get your influenza vaccine, but the good news is the same things that prevent the spread of COVID-19 prevent the spread of influenza as well. So we will benefit from the face covering requirements this winter, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's a big deal. I saw some of that preliminary research out of Argentina and Chile. Lowest flu levels so far in midwinter in decades in the Southern Hemisphere. That is huge.
Yeah. And it's the face coverings and the physical distancing. That's what's doing it.
And, of course, that would really help keep folks out of the hospital. So what should we look like, or what should we look for now as we come up here to August in Arizona?
Everyone has got to stick with the face covering. It's becoming a normalized behavior, which is great. That's the number one thing for people to remember. Number two, keep with the physical distancing. Doesn't mean social isolation. I'm changing the way I say it. I don't say social distancing anymore. I say physical distancing because people need that social interaction. There's ways to connect with people and still be a few feet away. So that's the other thing is okay. The physical distancing and the face covering. And if you do feel bad, sir, don't go out in public. Don't expose your coworkers and family members. Do what you can to go into isolation. And let's continue to hold our elected officials accountable. They work for us.
Yep.
And what that means is we have got to fix this turnaround time, and it's up to the people to hold their elected officials accountable. This has gone on too long. This has got to be fixed.
All right, Will Humble, thank you very much. Will, we'll look for you in about a month. Thanks.
Okay, take care. Bye.
Will Humble, the former health director for the state of Arizona. This portion of the Buckmaster Show presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. You can start your trip planning now by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. And when they lift their quarantine, not allowing out-of-staters to come, when that's lifted, we'll let you know, and you'll be able to travel back to the land of enchantment. That's it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Tom Fairbanks, Bill Buckmaster wishing you a very pleasant afternoon.